I don't see there is another person having traveled through this kind of a journey, being able to combine these pedagogies from different schools into one unified theory, and also implement a practical tool for that.
Aalto University Podcast.
This is Leading for Interdisciplinary Creativity, and I am your host, Irina Viippola. In this episode, we explore innovative teaching methods and the essential skills students need to thrive in today's dynamic world. We'll examine strategies for keeping skill sets relevant, along with ways to support the development of future problem solvers. We'll also discuss the critical role of learning from failures. Our guest today is an expert in design education with valuable insights to share. Welcome, Salu Ylirisku.
Thank you.
Before we start our discussion, can you introduce yourself and tell a little bit about your background?
All right, so I'm Salu Ylirisku. I have background in computer science, originally from the University of Helsinki, where I focused on user-centered user interface design of computing systems. Then I moved to industry. I was there for a couple of years, and then I started like more than 20 years ago in the University of Art and Design as a design researcher. My focus was user-centered concept design, and that's where I'm still working with the IDBM students.
Okay, so user-centered concept design. Can you describe a little bit what you mean by user-centered concept design?
So user-centered design is typically designers just talk about design. Design is kind of through its foundation user-centered, because you want to create something that's meaningful and valuable to people, and that's property of that tradition. What concept design, or what I also call conceptual designing, that I did my doctoral study about, it's more about kind of making sense of things. And that is not limited only to the field of industrial design, but it's very relevant. For example, currently I'm working with electronic engineers, and in that field as well, people should have skills to communicate and to make sense of ambiguity and so forth.
So you're teaching the IDBM students here at Aalto. What kind of courses you are running for them?
So the course that I'm teaching is called Networked Partnering and Product Innovation, NEPI for short.
Yep.
Like it's easy to remember by that name. The course focuses on user-centered concept design in the context of connected technologies. So we are talking about Internet of Things. It was a challenge. I will get back to that, kind of how the course was a total failure when I started it, but now it's working and students seem to love it.
Okay, how long have you been running it now?
We started the course in 2018.
Okay.
So 7 years, if yep. I count right.
Yeah, okay. And have you been teaching any other courses for the IDBM students?
Not for IDBM. My main focus in study or teaching is for engineering bachelors, where I'm teaching design thinking and electronic prototyping and advanced prototyping, where the students actually create complicated technical things. I'm not anymore asking the IDBM students to do that. I learned the hard way that it's not the way to go.
Okay, too complicated.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll get back to that a bit later. What kind of skills do you feel that students should have in today's world?
That's a brilliant question. I have been challenged by that myself very much when traveling through the journey of first starting with technology in computer science. There it was apparent that you need to learn to program and to think in terms of what the computing systems require. We still have today and in an increasing manner computing systems around. So we need to have some specialist skills I think all the students should possess some special skills, regardless of what they are studying. In design, you need to have some hard skills. You need to learn to model, or you need to learn materials, structures, mechanical design or something. In engineering, it's different, but that's the specialization. You just need to have something that you can actually do so that it works reliably, that you can deliver functional results. The main focus of my journey as a kind of pedagogist and researcher have been trying to understand what this conceptual design or reflective practice of work is about. And I have been developing a lot of theory as well as practical methods for teaching reflective thinking. So that's a big and theoretically very deep difference between engineering schools and design schools. Typically in engineering you don't find that reflective thinking educated that much, because the focus is on this teaching specialists who can reliably and in controlled fashion solve problems, technical problems. Then there's also a third set of skills in addition to the specialists and reflective skills of designers. That's something that I have named together with the head of Design Factory, Tuva Björklund. We invented the name to call these the shaping skills. Mm. Basically, it's the ability to provoke change, to actually make an impact. And that has been in the kind of tagline of or slogan of IDBM, like impact.
Yeah.
There's the IDBM impact event even every year happening. So that kind of boils down to what I would call like having learned a particular kind of attitude towards working, like appreciating value in a particular way and quality. In addition to attitude, you need to be able to and have this kind of initiative taking mindset that mm-hmm. you actually get things running, get things started, you explore in a self-organized manner. And then thirdly, you part of the shaping skills is agency. So you need to actually gain a position where you get things done. And that that set of skills requires a lot of teamwork, communication, and gaining resources, negotiating with people, and so forth.
Yeah. So what kind of pedagogies can educators then use to make sure that this skill set, these three different skill sets and know-hows, also are relevant in the future? So whatever we are now teaching for the students, that it will be also relevant in the days to come?
So there are certain things that don't really change. The kind of reflective thinking is related to change, kind of being able to deal with the changing world. And what we are experiencing today is increasingly speedy changes in the whole world, including nature, ecosystems, and technical stuff. Everything is changing at an increasing speed. And so we need to train students and people, practitioners who are able to make sense what are the worthwhile problems to be solved. And that's an important skill set that doesn't kind of grow old. You just need to learn new tools. AI has become available recently in a form that actually gives you pretty much like superpowers to think in a reflective fashion. And in terms of pedagogies, what I use a lot is learning diary.
Interesting, yeah.
And that, in my opinion, is the one most powerful learning tool you can have for this kind of skill set, like reflective thinking. Because it forces students to put give form to their experiences. So it kind of enables them to really kind of get back to what did I do, why did I do that. And in addition to just writing stories, I ask students to read academic literature and then reflect or relate their own experiences and their own plans to the literature. And through that, they start to build connections to kind of things that have been there longer in the history, and hopefully also therefore being relevant for a longer time. And in terms of pedagogical structure, I always have projects. So the teaching is project-based. And it's quite different. Typically in engineering schools, you seldom have just projects. As compared to my teaching, every course is a project course. So in engineering, you have like a theory that you expect the students to learn. You present the theory, its foundations, practical implications, and then a way to calculate the stuff in a particular methodic manner that gives you the correct result. With design, it's completely different. And through projects, there is no correct result. There are just different results that work in different ways. And you need to start to appreciate the ways things work. And there are just different perspectives that you need to bring into the discussion. Typically, what I'm asking the students to take into account, first of all, the perspective of the user.
That's a good point.
And that I typically conceptualize in terms of desirability, so that we should have desirable products in the end of the line. The other aspect is feasibility. So we should have technologies that can be built and that it actually is solid way to solve the problem, because there are typically a ton of different ways of solving a complex technical problem. And it requires quite a bit of skill and learning to be able to do that. Then there's the third perspective is the business side, so that you need to be able to bring about ideas that are viable, so that they are sustainable, that you can actually build the things. If you create physical products, that it makes actually sense to create those, so that you are not creating something extensively expensive that people would not be able to afford. So that perspective is crucial for the whole as well. So users, and technology, and then the business side needs to be considered. And that's wonderfully captured in the IDBM program structure.
And have you been using these pedagogical methods or teaching methods in all your courses? So not only in the IDBM course, but also then in the engineering courses you are running?
Yeah, I'm always there's a project. And I've been very positively surprised by the capabilities of freshmen, like the first year students in the autumn, to be openly learning, to become like thinking like designers. They haven't yet been spoiled by the engineering education to be too rigid in their thinking. Later, towards the end of their studies, they tend to be really, really nervous when they are introduced with the challenges that designers work with, that are characterized by open-ended design brief and ambiguity and different opinions. And I've seen people struggle with that. But the freshmen, the first year students, are somehow very wonderfully open to this kind of work, and the pedagogy works there. The pedagogy also works with the masters. Nevertheless, I've learned now that I have been developing the diary feedback system to become very, very structured, and I can now, with the help of a very sophisticated AI tool that I've been developing, to give precise feedback on the quality of content of the diaries. There are several dimensions of reflexivity and reflectivity and shaping that I'm analyzing through the diaries. And I noticed that my first year students learned to be better writers on their first semester as compared to IDBM students.
Oh, really?
On their masters. That was a surprise to me. Some of the students were able to, in my kind of last semester NEPI course in IDBM, they were able to catch on through the feedback, but some were very much against the way I was doing the diary writing. I guess there is the reason that they've grown up already to a particular style of writing, learning diaries and getting right. feedback. And then when in a course which only lasts like 6 weeks, they just refuse to change their practices that they've already developed. So that way I really like working with the Fuchsies, the first year students, because they are so flexible, so malleable, and so kind of welcoming to new kinds of ways of working and then adapting those. And they become brilliant reflective thinkers already in a matter of half a year.
Hmm. That sounds really, really exciting, because we have had some issues also with the learning diaries. We are using them in quite many courses in the Department of Design, but they are relatively workload heavy for the teachers. How big are your courses? How many students do you have?
Roughly 60 students.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I tried last autumn, final time I tried that, to have two courses at the same time running with weekly learning diaries. So I was reading 114 learning diaries a week, and it's not possible to make that sensible. But 60 diaries a week is a sustainable amount. And what I've learned with working with AI is that it does not actually reduce the workload of a teacher who has to, with AI, you actually have to read the diary. You need to also read the feedback from the AI, and you need to edit the comment statement on the diary. And compared to the previous practice that I had only kind of technical criteria for what the diary should fulfill, like a word count, that you should have a picture, you should label the picture, you should cite the picture in your body text, you should have a citation of an academic paper, and then reference which is formatted correctly. So that way I was promoting that the students would learn academic writing practices, which I learned when I was still working in the Department of Design. I learned that students only started reading and writing on their masters. And it was a struggle to get students to actually write good quality academic texts. And for that reason, now I'm teaching the students on the very first semester in the university to read and write in the correct academic fashion. And they are brilliant writers already in the end of the first semester.
Yeah.
And IDBM students are already, they are good writers. They know the academic practices. But the criteria that I was using in the diaries were so superficial, and getting into the content, giving content-related deeper feedback, it required a lot of brain power from the teacher. And if you have 60 students, you just can't do that properly. So that you can't really deeply engage with the content of different kinds of students' learning diaries every week. And that was the reason I started to develop that reflection analyzer. Originally, I named it that, but it's currently a diary analyzer tool.
Okay, so you have an actual tool developed for this. Is it something that others can use as well?
I can briefly tell about the history of that.
Yeah.
So, because I've used the learning diaries so much, and then central to the learning diaries is the concept of reflection. And then I, when I was like 22 years ago in Denmark, visiting Professor Jakob Bohr, and I was participating the their what they were called portfolio exams in the end of their semester, where the student is presenting what they have learned through a half an hour presentation. And Jakob told me that there are actually, I could expect to see three levels of reflection in the presentations. And the first one is pretty much chronological reporting of what they did in the semester. That would be the poorest, the most weak form of the presentations. The second level would be about themes, so that they for example, they would talk about user experience related stuff. They would explain that in terms of mechanical engineering, we learned this and that. So it was thematically grouped work. Whereas the highest level presentations would be that they would have some sort of a perspective or theory or lens through which they were perceiving their learning journey through the semester. For example, thinking design as language and analyzing things through that lens, or design, am I doing design or research? Having that kind of deep question. So those were kind of some, they had the unified character to them. And so I picked up these ideas from Jakob, that okay, if we would do a simple AI that could say if this is a reporting, thematic clustering, or unified theoretical work, could we simply categorize the quality in these three broad categories? Yes, we could. And I learned on the first day I tried it that, okay, it's not enough. There's so much more the reflection. And after the first day of rehearsing with my own learning diary, so I brought about my experience of teaching the first day, and I threw it into the AI analysis, and then I was like horrified by the poor results. And then of course I had to, the AI, how it works is that you need to tell it what to look for, and you need to give it very detailed instructions, and the better the instruction is, the better the output. So then I was reading the feedback, I knew what I had written, then I had to develop better instruction. And then through this kind of, I would say, critique or disagreement driven process, I have now written or read and given feedback to thousands of diaries.
Yeah.
So in the, I started this in 2024, like more than 1.5 years ago, and used it in three different courses. And so it has evolved a lot. And now there is, in addition to reflection, with five different categories, kind of sub-dimensions to that. I don't recall by heart. There's reflexivity, like how the student is navigating through their own personal learning identity and how they are evolving. So displaying awareness of that. And then there's the shaping, like how they are displaying the kind of productive attitude, how they are taking initiative, and how they are also gaining agency in their projects. And those, there are kind of clear indicators how users can tell about these in their learning diaries. And it has proven super powerful. Like, I think in the NEPI course, I think that time is a bit too short to learn all those in a matter of 6 weeks. But when I have like a full curriculum where I first meet the students on the first semester, then on the spring of the second year, and then final project, I can have the students grow into really powerful professional thinkers already in matter of their studies. So that pedagogy really works.
Have you been sharing this also with others? Have you been writing articles or something?
Yeah, just on Friday we submitted an article with Tuva Björklund to a conference in UK and this summer. I hope it goes through. So, but I would consider this is a major contribution, not only to kind of diary analysis, but theoretically in the university pedagogy as well, because this combines experiences from the design school, from the engineering school, and from the business. So it's kind of the designers are really displaying this reflective practice in how they are taught. I worked there with designers for over 13 years when I was a researcher there. Now I have been here with electrical engineers for over 8 years, 8.5 years. So I know how they are trained, what is their typical the pedagogic for training the specialist skills. And with IDBM, I have also been introduced to this kind of entrepreneurial way of thinking and doing and how the pedagogy works. And there I would see that the third aspect, the shaping, is really unique and really mostly presented in the context of business people, so that you actually need to get things done. You need to get resources, you need to be able to negotiate, you need to get the agency to make a change in the world. So I don't see there is another person having traveled through this kind of a journey, being able to combine these pedagogies from different schools into one unified theory, and also implement a practical tool for that.
This may be then you have been already answering my next question, because of course as educators we have a lot of responsibility on how to then give the students relevant skills and know-how to actually solve the wicked problems in the world, or at least quite big problems. But do you have anything else to add on this, that how do we support the development of these kind of genius problem solvers that we are expected to educate?
Yeah, in the context of engineering, they develop genius problem solvers. But I would see that rather than only catering for solving problems, we need to develop people who are able to see what problems are worth solving. That's even more important. So, but those both skills are essential. So that we reflective skills are especially important for discovering what problems there are that we actually should invest in. And then the problem solving skills, those are mostly what I would call the specialist skills. And now here we have the two kind of mindsets, reflection and specialization. But then we also need to have the third aspect there, making change. And that's not something that you easily conceptualize just through problems.
So then you kind of refer to these three. There were the specialist skills, then there were the reflective skills and shaping skills. So
yes,
these three aspects. Do you have plans then on sharing this within the Aalto community and the
sure.
teachers?
And also the Aalto tooling for the diary stuff. The tooling, developing it or kind of giving it out to another teacher will be a challenge. The courses have always unique context-dependent aspects, which change every time. So how do we communicate that as easily as possible from one teacher to another into the system? So that's a kind of, on one hand, a usability issue. How do people understand what and how to instruct? Then there will be always a couple of learning diaries over the course that somehow challenge the wisdom that has been input into the prompt. I learned that through my first year students. They started to learn so quickly that they were better performers than what the prompt was or what the AI was able to detect. So AI was actually grading their work rather low, but I immediately see that there's so much depth, so much kind of integrated wisdom in how the students was writing that I had to completely change the algorithm or the instruction for the AI. So there will be surprises for teachers, and it will be a challenge for teachers then to disagree with AI and how to bring about the changes into the system instruction. how could we enable my colleagues to do that without then having some sort of a very kind of rigid system and maintenance updates? So we'll see.
In the beginning of our talk, you were mentioning the failing part. And of course, the importance of failing is something that we are all aware of. But can you share this failure experience that you referred to?
Yeah, especially I would say that NEPI course was my biggest failure ever in the university career. So we established the course with a professor of practice, Pekka Nikander, who was here in 2018. And he was very much interested in developing a new course. We were kind of first targeting bachelor's, but then suddenly there was an opportunity in IDBM program for us to create a course to the program itself. So we just kind of jumped in that, okay, we create something. I had my user-centered concept design background, and then Pekka had very deep technological background. And we agreed, okay, we create a course. And through the experiments, I learned that there is like a light years distance between the technical detail that Pekka was teaching and my conceptual ambiguity, user-centered way, with really kind of, yeah, the distance was so huge that it's insane that the students survived the first course. Yeah, the feedback was, I recall from the students that, okay, hands down the worst course ever. And I invested an insane amount of time creating it. So I had created there, at the time, the blockchain stuff was really on kind of top of mind of technologists. And so we developed a way of how you could kind of be rewarded for your collaboration for innovative ideas. And there was a very complicated point gathering system that the students hated. I'm not getting into the details of that, but it was really devastating to get that feedback after investing a ton of time. Really, we wanted to make a super good course that failed miserably. Next year, pretty much the same, still next year. And I was like ready to give up the whole thing unless we would completely redesign. At the time, Pekka resigned from the Aalto also. Yeah. And so I had the freedom then to kind of completely rework the course. And then I really got back to what kind of students we have and what are the profiles that we want to contribute to developing in the course. I had also learned that it doesn't make sense to try to teach programming to business students in a matter of 6 weeks or design students. It's just too short time for getting anywhere meaningful. And so we had to figure out ways, how could we design a pedagogy that would work for this very diverse audience that we would have. Although there's kind of a common characteristic that I would see in IDBM, they are, as the program says, design business management. So these are people who probably would end up in positions like product manager, entrepreneur, like higher positions where they might not themselves do all the hard work of building the equipment, but guiding, understanding, to be able to negotiate with different kinds of people and be able to speak the languages of the other professionals. Like you must be able to speak to an engineer with such precision that there's no confusion as what you mean by snappy experience. You need to tell the milliseconds. And then once you go to that level, it also sets requirements for the designers who claim that, okay, you should do this snappy thing, but you need to be able to tell it to the engineer in a way that's unambiguous. And then you need to find out what is the tolerance. So you need to do better research as a designer as well. And then, of course, there will be the business person saying that, okay, that requires too much work. We just need to, let's make a ready-made component or buy it and not waste time in working it ourselves. And then I redesigned the course so that the teaching assistants became the programmers and the creators of the prototypes, and the IDBMers were instructors. So they were guiding like what the TA should be doing for them. And also I designed a complicated technical system in the beginning of the course called Hex Machine.
Hex Machine.
Hex. So it's okay. Hexagonal towers.
Okay.
It's a like a labyrinth where the students are asked to create the system that takes a steel ball from one corner of the labyrinth to the other without touching. So you need to sense when the ball comes into your tower. You need to build an electronic mechanism that detects the ball and then transports it out from your tower to a dedicated next tower through a dedicated hole in the side of the tower. And that proved to be a wonderful experiment in many regards. It fits perfectly to the course topic networked partnering because the students are forced to negotiate with each other, like how the ball is traveling, how we are building the maze structure, how high are you sending the ball to our tower, through what hole in the side of the tower we are expecting it, how do we build the mechanism, and then they are introduced the concept of Internet of Things, because they then on the second week they need to make it interactive so that the audience has a voting app where they are voting like, okay, does it go left or right from your tower? And so it gets quite complicated technically, even though we are not revealing all the details of the technical complexity at that phase. So that the discussions that the students are engaged in that exercise, it reflects quite a lot the level that I'm expecting later in the course, where they do an actual design project, but they do the kind of foundational concept design with user-centered way. And then there's a final exhibition called Nexpo, like NEPI Expo. Where the students are presenting their concepts with functional prototypes that our TAs have been helping them to build.
But these are digital prototypes.
Digital, like, so they have electronics, they have embedded like circuit boards, they have...
Okay, so they are physical, they're making also the physical...
And they are interacting with the internet.
Wow.
Depending on the backgrounds of students, of course they are able to create... there are students who have studied robotics, they have students who have studied computer science, web design, and so forth. So, and the course also help kind of enable students from different backgrounds to utilize their background. But it doesn't require a student to have that engineering background to start with. So, in the end, the students, I would say they develop skills to be managers of different kinds of peers that talk different languages.
How big are the teams? So they're working in.
So they are six-person teams.
Okay.
Somewhat large, but that seems to have proven to work pretty well for that project.
So what kind of feedback do you get now from the course? So in the beginning, it was by far the worst course ever. And
now the students, based on the gradings of the student feedbacks from the. Courses, all courses in IDBM, this is their favorite. It has gained the best scores across all the IDBM courses. So it's a strong evidence that this works.
This works. And what do you think, what is the reason why this works? Like really, is it about the doing so that they get into actual like physical execution? Or what's the secret of the...
I think we have been able to make the course design such where, regardless of the student background, they can learn something meaningful to them in order to train on those skills that make them better international design business managers in the future. Somehow it kind of, it's very self-organized, it's very chaotic to my eye, it, you know, kind of, it's sometimes difficult to even understand or know what's happening inside all the teams. That's also why I see the value of the learning diary so important, because then I have a probe into the minds of the students so that I have a sense of what's happening in the course. When I, a couple of years ago, I didn't use the learning diary and I was completely lost, like what is happening? And then the grading was also a challenge. I would say that in this kind of teamwork project course, we should give also a lot of emphasis to the students' personal learning effort. And it's really difficult if we only grade the team results, because then you get free riders.
Yeah. And that happens in many courses as well.
Yeah.
That sometimes some students just can't contribute as much as others.
Yeah, and one thing that I changed a couple of years ago when ChatGPT came was that I switched from my online exercise. So there is a little bit of this specialist knowing that I want them to learn in the course, and that relates to Internet of Things. So that I asked them to learn that, okay, there are these easy four building blocks of Internet of Things. So you have the app, you have the cloud, you have the thing, and you have the network. And all these have to be in all Internet of Things products. And then they need to learn this through the course, and then I have an oral exam. So I'm interviewing all the students after the course for 15 minutes per student. So they need to remember these four, and then the viability, visibility, and desirability triad. And then they get the full points if they remember those seven things. So it's very easy exam, but somehow it had a dramatic difference on how the students are attending the lecture sessions, and then they're they actually learned those things.
We've been discussing quite a lot about the skills and the know-how and the different pedagogies also. How to then convey these skills for the students. Is there something that we haven't mentioned or something that you would still like to point out when it comes to the teaching the IDBM students or the engineering students?
Maybe just coming back to that framework of reflection and specialization and shaping. I actually last spring, I had another failure.
Okay.
It was an engineering course. We had redesigned my 5-credit course into a 10-credit engineering course called Design Thinking and Advanced Prototyping. And I created very extensive training for the students. I had teams of 6 students, and I asked them to form the group so that you would have a different specialization for each student. So one student was the hardware, the circuit board person. The other student became the software person for that hardware. So it's called firmware. Then there was a cloud programming architect role. Then there was app programmer, like web apps. Then there was the user interaction designer / user experience specialist role. Then we had physical / mechanical designer. And we built like 6 weeks of training for these profiles. And then I expected that, okay, we get wonderful things in the end of the course. That didn't happen. We only had like 3 of the 7 teams after the course completing something sensible.
Right.
That was very low percentage, and some students were dropping the course. They were kind of just annoyed by the complexity of the technical stuff. They did very little the kind of iterative prototyping, which is essential for design thinking, and so the course was a complete failure. even though that I had invested a lot of their reflective capacities and specialist capacities in the pedagogy, but I was missing the shaping. Mm. And there I had been kind of sensitized to the area of this kind of entrepreneurial mindset earlier on, but I had not integrated that into my pedagogy. Now it is there. So it was after that experience when I started to conceptually develop that further and develop that into the diary feedback thingy also. So last year I didn't have that shaping skills analysis in the pedagogical kind of learning diaries, but now I have. It was after last summer, in the autumn, it was the first time that I had the shaping there, and that was had actually a dramatic impact on what the students were doing.
Oh, okay.
Because then they are rewarded for the teamwork effort, for the sharing, for supporting communication, and all that stuff that shows that you are actually actively developing things. And so that was a part or experience that really helped me to develop my pedagogy deeper, and that I will be carrying forward from now on.
Mm.
So
okay.
Failures so are good.
Failures are important.
Yeah.
That's really true, because then the learning also kind of accelerates when you fail.
Yes. If you don't fail, then you learn less.
Mm. Yeah. This is a good guidance for the students as well,
yep.
So that they shouldn't be afraid of failing. Okay. Thank you, Salu. I think that we have already covered all the things that I wanted to cover. Thank you for the interview.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you for listening. I am your host, Irina Viippola. This episode was edited by me and Aditya Parek and produced by the IDBM program at Aalto University. Ihan mahtavia kokemuksia. Oh my god.
Joo.
Joo, sun pitää ehdottomasti opettaa mulle nämä oral exams, että millä tavalla se toimii järkevästi.